Have you ever wanted to be the first to know if aliens really exist? Well, with Nebula, you can be! Nebula is the streaming service that's home to It's Probably Not Aliens, as well as our YouTube channels. And the best part? All of our content goes up early on Nebula. So when we break first contact with ET, you'll be the first to find out. That's right, you'll be able to listen to the next episode of this show before anyone else. Plus, we post bonus content that you won't find any other place. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and be the first to know if this time it really is aliens.
Now, Tristan, I see here that in the cold open, you have exactly one bullet point that is two words, and those two words are worm bucket.
Yeah.
So should I just try to guess what that is about?
Maybe. But the thing is, you might guess correctly. I don't know. If you're
okay, I have three ideas of what worm bucket could be.
Okay.
Do you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I have not.
So there's a bit where one of the characters, Charlie, has like a dream journal or something where they find it and they try to like do something nice for him. And he just wrote the word like worm hat over again, worm hat, worm hat, worm hat. And they didn't know what it meant because there wasn't any context. Mm-hmm. So they were like, could it be? And I'm going to apply the same logic to worm bucket. Could worm bucket be a bucket full of worms? Could it be a bucket for a worm, like a bucket for a worm to use, a little bucket, little tiny bucket for a worm to use to like, you know, bring water from a well or something? Or could it in fact be a bucket made of worms? Those are the three possibilities of worm bucket that I have, much like worm hat.
You know, those in some ways, they're all wrong, but the last one is the closest to being right.
Now, That raises a lot of questions also. But what was funny about the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode is that it turns out none of them were right. And in fact, worm hat is pronounced Vermat or something like that, and was like the name of this like German guy in Charlie's dreams. Is there a chance we're talking about German people today as well?
I mean, yes, but not in this case.
Okay.
Sounds good. Okay. So here's what this is about.
Tell me about Worm Bucket.
So are you a fan of auteur, filmmaker, director Denis Villeneuve?
Okay. This is when I come clean. I've not seen any of the Dunes.
Okay. So that is.
Do I need to watch the first one if I want to watch the second one?
Yeah. It's basically an adaptation of two halves of a book.
Okay. Hold on. Wait. But you are putting this, you are making my mind click. Were we talking about the popcorn bucket?
Yes, we are talking about the popcorn bucket. So, okay, I knew you had to have come across the worm bucket at some point.
I've seen this, yes.
I wanted
Can you explain it to people?
So, I think it's AMC or some company. One of the theaters has put out a novelty bucket for popcorn for Dune 2, which came out, I think, last week. I haven't seen it.
As of this recording, it's probably been like a month and a half ago for you listeners.
I haven't seen it yet because I have a toddler and I need an evening where I am not busy, which doesn't exist. So I'm actually going on like a short, like mini vacation on my own in a couple weeks. And I'm going to use part of my vacation in another city to actually watch a movie. So Denis Villeneuve's Dune came out last week.
Dune Part Two. The squeakquel.
The squeakquel. The continuation of Zendaya's being typecasted as a woman who is unimpressed by Twink.
So the role she was born to play.
Yeah, that is, she's being typecast. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. Tom Holland, sometimes it's Timothée Chalamet. You know, they have the same energy. Timothée Chalamet is like a fancy version of Tom Holland. Tom Holland is like what's it called? Someone's like, I want Timothée Chalamet, and then your parents say, we have Timothée Chalamet at home, and then Timothée Chalamet, and then it's like Tom Holland.
It's just Tom Holland.
Yeah.
I've always said that Nathan Drake is just a less fancy Willy Wonka.
Everyone's been saying that.
Everyone's been saying it.
So so you know how like when movies,
we have not talked about this worm bucket. People have seen it. They put out a novelty popcorn bucket
that looks
inspired
like one of the
by
sandworm.
Dune 2.
Yeah, and the thing is, it doesn't look so much like a thing that you eat popcorn out of.
No,
as much as a thing that you fuck.
Yeah. You have sex with it.
Yeah. And since what I love, one of my favorite things about Dune, as Denis Villeneuve has been adapting it, is that worm.
And adopting it.
Worm memes.
He's the daddy.
Yeah. As worm daddy.
As worm daddy Denny. Worm daddy Denny Villeneuve says.
Exactly. But I think that worm posting and like the sort of like the shit posting thing around the Dune movies has been just talking about worms, like posting worm and all that kind of stuff. So
would you still love me if I was a worm?
Yeah, if I was a giant worm that ate people.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody who I'm sure the internet will be extremely surprised to find out, as someone who has read the 6 Dune novels and likes them quite a lot.
What? You?
Yeah. It's been a ride. But yeah, the worm bucket looks like a thing that you would fuck.
It is a popcorn bucket that is ribbed for your pleasure.
Yeah, it's quite wild. It's interesting. And it got all the way through, like even after the memes came out, when like a prototype had surfaced on the internet, they went with it, and you can.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy this thing.
You can buy it.
It is a thing
Good
that you
luck.
Can purchase.
Apparently, it's I've been reading that it is so hard to get a hold of now, and I wonder why.
Yeah, they're going to be, what's it called? They're being bought out by adamandeve.com for future redistribution.
Oh, what a collab that would have been.
Yeah, Fleshlight, if you're listening, look at this.
This one's all you.
This one's on you. If you don't jump on this opportunity, I'll be surprised. Denis Villeneuve, if you want a new sponsorship opportunity, a new way to merchandise Dune, Adam, go to Fleshlight.
Go to fleshlight.com/Dune2. I don't know if that's definitely not a real website.
No. Or if it is, give us money. Anyways.
They're definitely not the sponsor of this episode.
No. Although.
Could be.
If you are Denis Villeneuve and you're listening to this podcast, or you are Fleshlight.
First of all, very sorry I haven't seen any of your worm movies yet. That's on me.
Yeah. Sardaukar throat singing. Top tier yeah. thing. And also enjoying it. I also am excited for when this series does so many good numbers that you are forced to adapt the entirety of the Dune saga, including the final three.
Okay.
That are a combination of confusing and horny, okay. but in an uncomfortable Ooh. Way.
Oh.
And we learn that I you can pinpoint the part where, I don't know this for sure, but it definitely feels like the point when Frank Herbert is going through a divorce, because there's like a part in the series where it's like basically women, am I right, are ruining the entire galaxy or the entire universe through sex.
Women. Can't get enough of these sandworms.
At that point, I think the sandworms are almost extinct. Keep in mind, the 6 Dune novels take place over a period of literally thousands of years. So
I don't know anything about them, Tristan. I've not read the books. I've not seen the movies. I don't know anything.
Ooh.
I'm so sorry.
All right, so now this is the Dune cast where I'm going to teach Scott how Dune works.
Teach me how Dune works. You're the new Dune daddy.
Dune daddy.
You're the worm daddy.
Long story short, 10,000 years in the future, and yeah. We banned computers. No, 20,000 years in the future, we banned computers because the computers rose up against us, and we decided that computers were done. But that means
computers
that,
bad.
Yeah, but then in order to keep being a sci-fi society, they decided that the answer to that is to fill in all the places that would be computers with
with drugs. And so your computer is called a Mentat. He's a guy who does drugs that makes him really good at math.
Okay. That's sort of going back in time, though, because the original computer, the term was originally a job description.
That is true.
That's a person. People were the first computers, literally.
Yeah, there's a lot of women doing secretarial work and or doing at least clerical work. And I don't know if they were doing super meth, basically, to do math like they do in Dune. But the other part is that to travel faster than light, you need to be able, you move so fast. And in order to not, die, you have to kind of be able to tell the future. You have to be able to see the future. And in order to do that, you have to ingest a fuckload of
more drugs.
A drug called spice that lets you see the future. The problem, though, is that spice cannot be replicated synthetically and only exists in a natural environment on a single planet. And that planet is a complete desert and it's filled with worms.
Okay.
That's the central setup of Dune. And then, and also because of the lack of computers, everything has turned into a feudal system. So it's got dukes and barons and stuff. And there's also a whole eugenics program being run by secret witches that are trying to make a person who can see the future. And then they do that accidentally. But then it turns out to be one of the worst things that humanity's ever done.
Oh, man.
And that person is Denis Villeneuve. Or no, that person is Timothée Chalamet.
That person is Wonka.
Yeah, Willy Wonka.
They didn't do a Wonka bucket.
Willy Wonka is the Kwisatz Haderach. You've heard it here first, everyone. The one who can be
made that means. We should start the episode at some point.
Otherwise, I'm going to get deep into Dune lore if you don't stop me.
We cannot let Tristan get too deep into Dune lore. This is a podcast about aliens. The worms are like aliens, right? It's a different planet. This is a podcast about ancient astronaut theory and pseudoscience, pseudo-history, and we look into the TV show Ancient Aliens, and we debunk their claims while teaching you about real-life history of people and places and things and concepts, I guess, in this episode. We're trying so hard to avoid talking for the second month in a row about more Nazis. We're on this kick. My name is Scott Nicewander. I know nothing. I think I've made that pretty clear. I don't know what Dune is.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and I'm the one who's been selectively bred for thousands of generations in order to be able to unlock the ancestral memories of both the female and male sides of my background. And in doing so, can perfectly predict the future and will do so in order to become something that is described in the canon books as millions of times worse than Hitler.
Whoa. You're going to be a million Hitlers.
Yeah, I'm going to create a jihad that will burn a fire across the known universe.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, it's not great. Right. And also my kid's going to become a giant worm person. I haven't told him about that yet, but he does become one with the worm eventually.
Well, and puberty's weird.
The worm comes for us all. Speaking of Hitlers, fortunately, Earth's history has only ever had one Hitler. We have not unleashed Paul Muad'Dib upon humanity yet. So
you gotta stop. This means nothing to me, Tristan.
This whole trick of the book is that they don't explain anything. So you are also just tossed in with a bunch of words that you don't know. And the whole idea is you pick it up as you move along. Mm-hmm. Anyways, today we're going to talk about the swastika. That is the thing that I decided because
otherwise known as a worm bucket. That's probably can't say that.
If you think about it, it kind of looks like two wiggling worms. Although that's kind of mean because we'll get into it. The symbol is.
I know. I understand. I shouldn't have said it. I knew that it was a different.
Yeah.
Different actual good thing before Hitler took it.
On that note, there actually is a semi funny story that I heard. I think it was The Moth or one of those storytelling podcasts about this wedding that was happening where Indian woman, Jewish man are having a wedding.
Okay.
And because Indians have really big and elaborate weddings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The bride's family decides to take over organizing the event because weddings in India are multiple day affairs.
Yes.
But that means that decorations and stuff were not was completely taken over by them. And so when the groom to be shows up to inspect the place before, like, you know, the day before the wedding, notices mm-hmm. that his, you know, his Jewish family is coming and that the wedding place is covered in swastikas, which led to some very quick redecorations.
Oh, goodness.
And we'll get into kind of why that is a whole thing today, that
yeah,
the swastika. But I guess we should probably start with saying what millions of people run.
Oh, yes. All right. How does this swastika relate to aliens? Let me hit my little sound thing.
It's the least enthusiastic to push the sound button. What do they believe this time?
What do the people believe about the swastika and aliens?
So according to this, millions of people around the world believe that Nazi leadership were obsessed with studying the advanced, hyper-powerful technology of ancient India. We already know about Vimanas. We know about the nukes, the Brahma weapons. So obviously, the Nazis were aware that the aliens had been in contact yeah. and were obsessed with studying it. To the point where they adopted the symbol of the swastika from mm-hmm. ancient Hindu symbology because they wanted to also be connected with this symbol of extraterrestrial beings like the Hindu god Brahma. And so they decided that if you look around the world, you also see that the swastika shows up to indigenous people as being connected to extraterrestrials and that it could ward off evil and give you power. And so Hitler decided this symbol would give him power and that there was like it was supposed to connect him with the extraterrestrial and these ancient societies to build the next big powerful society.
It's very funny to me how much, and we've talked about this in a couple episodes now, about how much of this stuff is like stuff that we've covered already. Like we've talked about Brahma weapons and stuff like that too. It's interesting how it's all connected in a weird way.
There's a cinematic universe.
That's a good way of putting it. Yes.
There is some deep, like, ancient aliens lore, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, here's the idea.
All right. Let's get deeper into this. Let's be a little sandworm and dig deep into the planet. I assume that's what they do. I don't know.
They eat harvesters, and they go in the sand. Okay. Let's get our hooks into this worm and ride it through the Coriolis effect desert into the deeper story here.
Sure.
So, the Coriolis storm, sorry, by putting our hook in its gills. Anyways, the claim, okay, so let's get into like a little more detail. So basically, according to the Nazis had thought that there was extraterrestrial influence as part of the, you know, the idea that the Nazis had connections to ancient aliens or extraterrestrials, mm-hmm. often including the idea that the symbol is due to its ancient origins and its link to extraterrestrial civilizations, and that this is part of their overall, you know, story they have, that the Nazis were searching for ancient relics and lost civilizations, and they believed that they were trying to find an ancient homeland of Thule, which would have incredible powers, that again probably is the place where like the Aryans came from, which also, like, you know, from space, and like that they're aliens.
Yeah, just listen to the last couple of episodes that we've done about a lot of this stuff. It's all connected as we try and debunk, you know, mm-hmm. ancient aliens and Nazi stuff. This is a lot of stuff we've touched on.
Just so that you guys can feel a little bit better. In two episodes, I'm taking a Nazi break and we're going to do something.
We're going to take a break.
Just to get.
But just to sort of say, everything you're saying is sort of stuff that we've covered in previous episodes, just to like catch people up.
As we muck through basically this episode about ancient aliens and the, like, from ancient, we are literally like covering it episode by episode, and we're going through an episode called Aliens and the Third Reich. And that's why we've been in like Nazi mode for like the last like 2 months.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, so ancient aliens speculates that the Nazis were interested in this. And in doing so, they established like a base in Antarctica, and that there was like an ancient civilization underneath the ice in Antarctica. And basically all of it is built towards like the swastika was their attempt to make a connection with this ancient civilization.
Right.
When I looked into like where this story comes from, like where the story that they had these beliefs come from, we find actually a mix of different things. A lot of different places that believed in like various esotericisms and mm-hmm. and pseudoscience and just like post-war reinterpretations of Nazism. So I'm going to try and go through some of these quicker because we've covered a lot of this ground already, but I'll give a brief thing because not everyone listens to every episode. So yeah. One of the biggest people to talk about this, to make this connection between like the swastika and space and aliens, is a French-born Greek philosopher by the name or Greek writer by the name of Savitri Devi, who was a big proponent of the idea of esoteric Nazism. So like the first place this comes from is esoteric Nazism, which we did an entire episode on.
Yeah.
But is basically a idea of mystically reinterpreting the Nazism and involving or the Nazis and using the swastika as a sort of like a spiritual symbol, and shows like the extraterrestrial origins of the Aryan race.
Mm-hmm.
The other term for it is esoteric Hitlerism, because right. Some proponents have talked about how they believe that Hitler was literally like the avatar of like gods like Vishnu and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Real fun stuff.
Real fun.
Yeah. And this like was part of esoteric Nazism, which was this blending of Nazi ideology with other beliefs at the time, like mysticism, white nationalism, and neo-Nazism to make this sort of weird occult type thing that we are basically responding to, and is basically the intellectual origin of a lot of UFO and ancient astronauts conspiracy theories.
And hey, we're back. Yeah. We're here. We caught up to modern day.
Yeah. The other place this comes from is the proliferation of UFO conspiracies that have to do with the Nazis in the 1960s. Authors started spreading tales of Nazi UFOs that linked them to the occult or aliens. And this is where like these books that, you know, when we had the New Age movement in the 1960s, but also just like an increase in interest in UFO stories, people started publishing because, you know, Nazis also sell books. They would write stories about how the Nazis had all these connections to the supernatural or to space or whatever. And so that sort of cemented itself in lore. One of the biggest proponents that the Nazis had alien connections was a person by the name of Ernst Zundel, who I'll talk about a little bit later, but we also briefly mentioned he was a prolific German-Canadian Holocaust denier.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one being another person we discussed, who is Miguel Serrano, who is a Chilean diplomat who published the seminal works on esoteric Hitlerism that was trying to intertwine extraterrestrial stuff, but also Nazi ideology and the occult.
Mm-hmm.
And since these ideas came out, they've evolved over time and incorporated other elements from ancient astronaut theory, but also other parts of pseudoscience and speculative history, and then get picked up once it's been laundered from enough sources that you can no longer be like, this is a weird neo-Nazi belief. And it's just part of the general milieu of weirdness in the sort of esoteric space or in the UFO space or whatever. Then it gets picked up by shows like Ancient Aliens, who don't do the due diligence of finding out the sources of the things that they are trying to show on the show. And then they put it on TV for us all to be inundated with.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to what you were talking about, how, you know, Nazis sell books. Like that was the History Channel. And we talked about this. We've talked about this so much, but like, yeah, the History Channel, the big two money makers are World War II / Nazis and Ancient Aliens. And so they've combined them together, and that's why we're here. It's stuck in this weird arc of the podcast. See, you know, remember like last year when everyone was talking about how men always think about the Roman Empire or whatever?
Yeah.
So I don't. And we talked about it as discovered then. But I always thought that it was more about World War II. Like so many like dads think about World War II.
This is true.
A lot.
There's like this whole thing where there's this meme that went around for a bit where it's just like, when a man becomes a dad, he has two choices of what he is going to get into. He's either going to get weirdly into World War II, as if like all dads are secretly studying for some World War II test that they're going to have in the future. Or they get really into smoking meat. Those are the two kind of ways you could go down.
Okay.
And you're a former vegetarian. I don't know which one you're going to choose.
Who knows?
World War II or meat? What do the vegetarian dads do?
I'm on this podcast and I'm learning a lot about World War II.
Do you like smokers?
Like meat smokers?
Yeah.
I love a good smoked meat.
Thing is that in my house, like the genders are reversed in this area. So like my wife is the barbecuer.
Mm.
And I have been considering a smoker as a gift when I have money to buy a smoker. Because I feel like she would enjoy that a lot. Because as someone who's from the Midwest, she loves crock pots and slow cookers. And yeah. if you think about it, what is a smoker but a slow cooker barbecue?
That is true. Also, if you're not into meats, if you're like a vegetarian, smoke some potatoes. Make a potato salad out of it. Oh, it's delicious.
Mm.
It's the best potato salad you'll ever have.
Or make chipotles.
Make chipotle.
I found out that I found myself randomly reading an article about jalapenos for some reason. And I found out that a full 20% of jalapenos harvested get turned into chipotles. And I was like, that's more than I expected.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I was reading an
article. Let's just talk about smoking foods now. What if we hard pivoted this podcast next week? We're like Nazis, 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 Nazis. And then
how to make next the perfect week, brisket.
How to make brisket.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, everyone, you got your kielbasa ready?
Just like it's like live, like what's it called? You smoke it for 3 hours. The podcast is 3 hours long, and we just talk while you are sitting by your smoker, so that you can have it's like when you're barbecuing at a party and you have someone to talk to while you're like, oh, it's time for you to flip it over.
What if that's what you can imagine every time you listen to this episode? Just imagine that Tristan and I are having these conversations while we wait for our smokers to smoke some good meats.
Yeah.
We're around the smoker right now, Tristan and I, and we're just talking about World War II. We're the best of both dads.
Yeah, we're drinking beers and talking and smoking meat, which is weird because this usually is exactly where I end up every time I'm at a party.
Smoking meats? Well, you smoke meat at a party?
No, but talking about random shit like this.
I brought my own meat to smoke to this party. This is a BYOM.
Bring your own meat to smoke. Now that like the podcast has broken social containment in my house, like my YouTube channel never really caught on with my friends. I don't think many of my friends watch my YouTube videos.
Sure.
But the podcast, definitely. I have several friends who listen to the podcast. And so when I go to parties and they are there and it's like their job to introduce me, the podcast is one of the first things that comes up and it's a thing that people take an interest in. So I very quickly find myself talking about either UFOs or Nazis at parties. Cause you know me, once I started,
if you want to fix that, just bring a big stack of raw meat.
That's true.
Then people will be like, what's up with the raw meat guy? Just sitting around waiting for a smoker.
I thought there was gonna be a smoker here. I'm sorry. This was also a BYOS party. Okay. So the reason why people care about this swastika connection is that it intertwines a bunch of interesting stuff. You know, people who are into pseudo history, there's an angle there. People who are into conspiracy theories, this is like a hidden narrative that they don't want you to know about. And also it adds a little bit to the sort of enduring mystery that surrounds the fact that, like, why did the Third Reich do the things that it did? And are aliens to be part of it? How do we understand it? Because I think that like one of the things that keeps the Nazi regime in our heads as a cultural force is just the lack of comprehension for how they believed the things they believed. How did something so abhorrent to humanity actually
come
to pass?
How did it get that far? How did all this happen?
And the swastika has an unfortunate history because it began as a symbol of good fortune and well-being in lots of cultures. But today, in a lot of Western countries, it has now become unambiguously a symbol of hate and anti-Semitism.
Yes.
To the point where I think one of the reasons also why the swastika came up as a thing is that the swastika, I think, is one of the symbols that still has the capacity to shock, even 70, 80 years on. Like, it's one of those things where when you see it in public, it's like, holy shit. It still has an impact on people in a way that a lot of other symbols don't. And I think that is powerful and it draws attention. And that's why a lot of people want to be able to make some sort of bigger connection out of it, because there's this sort of thought in like the sort of mental heuristics of conspiracies that big things must have big causes. And that's sort of part of it. And also it has because it's a symbol that's shown up in the religious and spiritual culture of a lot of different places. It also is a really good connective piece for those who are interested in the supernatural and the occult and who are into Nazism. And also it allows for like you to, if you're conspiracy minded, tie Nazism them into this larger story of humanity, which is not great. But it is like one of the most provocative things that people can use to point to show why the Nazis might have had an interest in the occult and in spiritualism and mysticism and stuff like that, because they adopted such a spiritual symbol.
Okay.
The big people who are involved with it, again, Ernst Zundel, who was born in Germany, died in 2017, was a neo-Nazi and a Holocaust denier. He moved to Canada in 1958, where he became a prominent neo-Nazi and Holocaust denier. He was deeply anti-Semitic, not surprisingly, and he had
this, yeah, I was gonna say, does not surprise me.
Yeah, and was a big promoter of the idea that Jews were running the world, and he venerated Hitler and in Nazi Germany, so it's not just like everyone that I disagree with is a Nazi or something like that.
Right.
He's most notable in Canada because he was one of the biggest, like, because Canada has hate speech laws. The Canadian Constitution does not, like, it actively says that it does not protect speech. Like, our free speech does not extend to hate speech.
Okay.
And one of the biggest tests was when the court brought up Ernst Zundel on hate speech stuff, because like they wanted to not let him publish his books and stuff like that.
Mm.
In 1985 and 1987, he got convicted of these. But although later on, he did have his conviction overturned by the Supreme Court. Lots of interesting story. I don't know how much I should get into it, but like there's some parts where like I have a personal connection to this case because I used to work for the organization that defended Ernst Zundel in this, because it was like sort of the Canadian equivalent of the ACLU.
Okay.
And you know how like the ACLU would do something like that?
Right. Yeah.
I know, but that sounds horrible, but I know like a lot of them very Jewish lawyers who fought to do this defense on the grounds of like protecting constitutional rights in Canada. It's a complicated situation.
It's very complicated. All you need to know is Tristan Johnson, staunch Ernst Zundel defender.
No, I'm not even, I don't even agree with that organization on their stance on free speech. I have a different concept of free speech than like the sort of
version.
Yeah.
We can't go down that wormhole, rabbit hole, worm stuff, trying to bring us back to worms.
Yeah. For all of his hatred and his spreading of like vile ideologies, he was eventually deported from Canada and sent to Germany in 2005, where the Germans, because also, you know, saying Nazi shit is also a crime in Germany, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So he ended up being convicted in 2007 for the crime of inciting racial hatred and defaming the memory of the dead, and did 5 years in prison.
Okay.
But what a
real cool dude.
Yeah. But one of the things that he did do is that in the 1970s, he tried to like launder Nazi ideas. And in the 1970s, UFOs were really popular.
Huge.
Yeah.
People loved them.
So he started publishing books under the pseudonym of Christoph Friedrich. And one of his books was called UFOs, Nazi Secret Weapon?
See, I love it. This is taking the page from Eric von Daniken. If you just put a question mark at the end of your title, then again, it's the classic thing we always talk about on this podcast, where it's just like, hey, whoa, I'm not stating anything. I'm just asking questions.
Yeah.
I'm just asking questions.
Exactly.
Nazi Secret Weapon? Chariots of the Gods?
You decide. This question mark is my plausible deniability.
And I will cash that in.
In this book, but also others, he made claims that flying saucers were Nazi secret weapons launched from an underground base in Antarctica, and that the Nazis were it wasn't aliens, but Nazis who were making all the advanced technology that we were seeing in the skies.
Okay.
And then
get your story straight, everyone.
Yeah, and that there might be connections to extraterrestrials, but it's like, these aren't aliens, obviously. It's like the people were like, these aren't aliens, they're angels. And it's like, no, they're not aliens, Nazis who are operating from their secret base in Antarctica. Which... then like he's like one of the major contributors to this broader connection between the Nazis and UFOs, and the speculation that they had all these connections and the occultism and all that kind of stuff. So he has been popular with like the Nazi UFO space, but also he's one of the most prolific and well-known Holocaust deniers in history. And his publications are still cited by people, showing that he has had a lasting impact on everything. There's also there's also the case of Miguel Serrano, who we talked about in episode 117.
Where we finished the fight.
Yeah.
That's what I made a joke about in that episode.
Yeah, he's the big guy behind the idea of esoteric Hitler terrorism and the whole Hitler being the avatar of Vishnu, which you can imagine then, because like the swastika is an important part of Hinduism and Indian Dharmic religions, that he would have made that connection as well. And the last one, and this is a weird one, I think I decided that I was going to make it its own episode altogether, because I feel like it's a thing that we just need to do a bit on. But another, like, if we're going to talk about UFOs and the swastika, we can't avoid talking about the Raelians. So
what is that?
So the Raelians, thing is, like, I realized that they aren't like a super big deal in America, because
never heard of this.
So Raelians are a cult. They're a UFO cult, but their founder, Rael, I think he's still alive. He is French, so he's from France, but it means that, like,
red flag already.
Yeah. But the Raelian cult is very popular in, or it is at least, like, by cult standards, it's more popular in the Francophone parts of the world. So the reason why I know about Raelians is because they have a contingent in Quebec and in, like, kind of French speaking Canada. But because America doesn't really have that French cultural tie very much.
No, not until you get to New Orleans.
Yeah. But the thing is that, like, the Raelians are also not, like, they're also popular in Japan, and they're a strange group of people. Like, one of the things that they wanted to do is their symbol is the most provocative and frankly grotesquely insensitive thing ever, which is a symbol of a swastika inside a Star of David.
Oh no.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh no.
Yeah, well, their whole idea behind it is that it's an ancient symbol of peace and harmony, and they want to kind of rehabilitate the symbol in that sense. But the general belief by Raelians is that there was a race of aliens called the Elohim that have, like, tried to they're basically responsible for genetically engineering humanity, and they have tried to, like, they cloned humans, basically. And so the Raelians at their peak were, like, they had a nonprofit called Clone Aid, where they were trying to raise money to improve the science of human cloning and stuff like that.
Clone Aid?
Clone Aid, yep.
Oh, God.
But they have, like, they have been very public in trying to dissociate the swastika from its Nazi connotation. Also, well known for being an extremely horny cult. They are, like, they're really into free love. Free love is, like, a super huge part of the Raelians.
Okay.
They're kind of a weird mix of that's extremely insensitive.
They got some
and also
good, they got some bad.
Yeah, they are. They are very much a mixed bag of things. As far as cults go, like, I think there's, like, been a more recent documentary on Netflix about them or something like that. So I don't know if, like, there's probably some, like, dark secret shit that has come out recently, but, like, the last I remember checking in on them, they were, like, a sort of, like, weird fringe cult that believes a bunch of UFO stuff, but also they're just kind of, like, they just, like, fucking each other, I guess.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. But again, I think we're gonna have to do our own episode on the Raelians, because
we got
they're
to
super
now.
Connected.
We have to now.
Like, I mean, they have their whole entire own ancient aliens theory, and they're funky in a very interesting way. And the leader of the Raelians, I think you want to look him up, because he looks like he looks kind of like open. He always makes me think of the racist version of the Mandarin that they did in Iron Man.
Oh, I see. Yes. Oh, I think I found him. Does he look sort of like he has Gallagher hair?
Yeah, he sometimes has a man bun, and he sometimes looks like
he has dog ears.
Like, if Bob Ross decided to become a clown,
he looks like his hair is fluffy dog ears.
Yeah, basically,
like from a border collie. That's what his hair looks like. His hair looks like border collie ears.
Precisely. Yeah.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. There's a lot of.
All right,
fun.
We have to do an episode of it. Though.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I would definitely love to do research on the Raelians. I did a video on Step Back about the Raelians like 1,000 years ago. So I'd love to come back and see what they've been up to.
Yes, please.
But yeah, digging into this thing, though, I tried, I'm like, oh, okay, how do I debunk these claims? And it's like, well, it's pretty easy to show that there is a clear lineage of it was invented by Nazis in the 60s, and there's literally no evidence to show this whatsoever. The only way I can really debunk it entirely is to just tell you that we know why the Nazis adopted the swastika, and I can just tell you that.
No, I would love to know that. That sounds like really important information.
Mm-hmm. But first, I need to tell you about a very quick thing about product.
Oh.
And or service.
Oh, okay. Service as well. Okay, yeah. Let's do it.
So some good product.
That was some good product. It was pretty okay service. You know, I'd say service was pretty good too.
Mm-hmm. It's probably no Nebula. So,
yeah. So great, sir. Honestly, best service.
Best service.
Good service.
Yeah. So let's dive into, like, I think the best way to debunk these claims that the, you know, that the Nazis adopted the swastika because of its connection to space and aliens is to tell you what the swastika is actually.
Yes, please.
And how it ended up being the symbol of the Nazi party. And, and that'll be the best thing. So,
yeah, I think we've sort of danced around it a little bit that it, I feel like most people know that it had meaning and significance before the Nazi party.
Yeah, it was a symbol. And it has been renamed to this point, but there was Swastika Ontario at a certain point in our history. I don't know what Swastika Ontario is.
Please be a fun name.
You know how a bunch of towns got themselves like renamed during World War I and World War II because they were associated with Germany?
Sure.
At least that happened here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm just agreeing with, I'm a very agreeable person.
And I just realized something, which is that there isn't, it didn't get renamed to anything because it still exists. And it is still called Swastika Ontario.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. Apparently it was founded in 1908 and it's been frequently noted on the list of unusual place names.
So that wasn't even that. It's not even like it was super historic then. If it's 1908, it had only been around for like 40 years less than before World War II. Just change the name.
Mostly, I think the reason why it hasn't been changed is because the entirety of the town, and town is an extremely special way to call it. The entire town is 1.21 square miles or 3.14 kilometers squared.
Gotcha.
So, and also I'm learning here, and this is very fun. I remember this. I remember seeing this because they tried to do like a swastika, like branded thing during, I think it was like during World War II. But one of the things, because they had like a sign for, I think like their hockey town or something like, hockey team or something like that.
Sure.
But they got rid of the swastika sign and they were talking about replacing it and renaming the town to Winston. But then the residents removed the Winston sign and replaced it with the swastika sign. With the message "To hell with Hitler, we came up with our name first."
Wow!
Yeah,
talk about reclaiming it.
Mm-hmm. It had a, it did have a rail station at one point, but it doesn't anymore, or it's abandoned. And as of today, Swastika has approximately 500 people living in it, so it's like not really much of a place.
It's not a high priority to fix it.
No. But outside of the small town in Ontario, the swastika is an ancient.
Did it originate before Ontario?
To hell with Hitler, Ontario. Yeah, to hell with Swastika, Ontario. A lot of people came up with it first.
Okay.
It's an ancient symbol, one of the most ancientest symbols, and it has. There's a lot of evidence that it has evolved independently in multiple places because it's basically a spiral and has shown up in various different cultures and different reasons.
It's a spiral with right angles.
Yeah. So we see things like we see it in Eurasia, but we also see it in Africa. We see it in Native American spiritual stuff, but the biggest place where it shows up is in India.
Mm-hmm.
Its design is, of course, being a cross with arms of equal length bent at right angles, which is seen as, quote, a chiral irregular icosagon. Whatever that means, don't know.
Icosagon.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. The word swastika comes from the Sanskrit word svastika, which means good fortune or well-being. Before Adolf Hitler, it was used for 5,000 years and is one of the core symbols used in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism to be a symbol of divinity, spirituality, and auspiciousness. I think sometimes it's used as a reference to reference samsara, which is sort of the eternal cycle of death and reincarnation within these religions.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it did have a significance in Europe as well. European cultures, including the Greeks and the Celts, but also Anglo-Saxons, used it as a pretty common symbol and even showed up in ancient Mesopotamia. So, like, again, everywhere.
Everywhere. People couldn't get enough of this shape. Mm-hmm.
The Navajo and the Hopi had swastikas that symbolized concepts like life and prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And today, it's in a really complicated situation because it's, like, one of the most important symbols to a religion that has, like, two of, like, the five major religions on Earth have it as one of their main symbols. And in several countries, it's illegal because it is a symbol of hate and anti-Semitism, which makes shit super complicated.
super complicated to navigate.
Yeah. So this is how the Nazis came aboard with it. The Nazis took the swastika symbol because it had associations with Aryan identity and Germanic history. Like, they basically looked at that ancient European stuff and were like, oh, this is a thing that we can use. Because at the start of the 20th century, the swastika was typically designed to be a symbol of good luck. You can see it in old churches. You can see it in like a bunch of things that show like it's supposed to be just a good luck symbol.
Like a four leaf clover.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it had been picked up by the Völkisch movement in Germany, which was this nationalist movement, like this attempt to build a German nation or a German national identity.
This is not, we've talked about this in previous episodes. That was a huge part of, you know, the rise of the Nazi party.
Yeah. And a lot of like neo-Nazis today, there's like a almost schism between like Nazis who are like super Christian and those who have kind of gotten into like the Völkisch movement and tried to embrace more like old Teutonic pre-Christian pagan stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sort of period, because we're talking about like the early 20th century, late 19th century, you have Germany trying to create a country where there hadn't been a country before. And
right.
The Völkisch movement was an attempt to do that, to build a German nationalism that hadn't existed before. And mm-hmm. The swastika was one of the symbols that they picked up as part of it. Hitler was inspired by this and adopted the swastika for the party in 1920. Him personally designing the flag to have a black swastika on a white circle with a red background.
He personally designed it?
Or that was his idea, like the sort of color combination, I guess, because
I guess
black, white, and red were basically the colors of the old German flag, like the Imperial German flag.
Sure.
So it had significance.
It's very strong.
Yeah. According to Hitler, he believed that the swastika was supposed to represent the victory of the Aryan man and the ideal of racial purity, which was the basic core of Nazi ideology. They formalized this in the Salzburg Congress, which happened on August 7th, 1920, which made it the official emblem of the party. And then, and the reason why he chose this symbol was because of the Aryan idea of the racial purity, but also because he wanted to create a powerful and iconic symbol that would rival the other powerful and iconic symbol that was dominating politics at the time, that of the sickle and hammer. The symbol of that represented the Soviet Union and communist parties around the world.
I'm just like imagining Hitler in Canva trying to come up with a new symbol that is striking.
And I mean, I think that the symbols both work for their intended purpose, because the idea of the swastika being this symbol of racial purity and such contrasted as opposition to the Soviet sickle and hammer symbol to represent the unification of workers, both those in the like both agricultural workers and industrial workers coming together for a unified purpose, which does seem very much like what communism represented and what fascism represented. And I think that another one of these things that is part of why they want to find this alien connection is because, and I think that, you know, your Ben's Shapiro will also try to do this, is that they want to distance this central concept of the Nazi party, which was that it was fanatically, fiercely anti-communist. And the reason why it got so powerful so fast was because there were a lot of people in German society, specifically the richer part of it, who were terrified of communism, and that there was the lack of action against Hitler. And the way that fascism branded itself was that they were the bulwark of Western civilization against communism. And talking about how Nazism was so fiercely anti-communist is really awkward when then after the war was over, America started positioning itself as being fiercely anti-communist.
Yeah, that makes it very complicated to explain to people, which I think is also probably why a lot of people like your Ben's Shapiro and others try to, you know, make the argument that like, well, you know, Nazis, it's socialist was in their, you know, their title. They were basically communists.
Yeah. So
America was fighting communists by fighting the Nazis when you think about it.
Yeah. Just like trying to distance the far right from.
Yes.
Like trying to like, basically it's the right trying to distance themselves from the logical conclusion of their belief system. Especially those like Ben Shapiro, who is of Jewish ancestry, who might be uncomfortable with the fact that his entire political ideology's end goal is extremely anti-Semitic. But that's a whole different thing. You know these cousins with Mara Wilson?
I did know that. You've unlocked that memory in my head. What a wild family reunion that must be.
I don't think that family reunions very much.
No, probably not.
I think she has very openly said that that is not a cousin she visits.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, Matilda's better than that. And the thing is, though, that Goebbels, the minister of propaganda under Hitler, when the Nazis took power, put in a decree that banned the unauthorized commercial use of the swastika, which then basically took away all other usages of it in Europe or in Germany.
Oh.
And so it solely came to represent the Nazis and the Nazi regime.
Oh, dang. This is like, it's like issuing a copyright strike.
Yeah, basically,
against
yeah.
everything else. Like, you can only use this if it means how cool we are.
Yeah, speaking of Nazis, Walt Disney. Walt Disney,
whoops.
If you think about it, the entire Disney model for its first while was taking like public domain stories out of like, you know, Western canon.
Sure.
And then turning it into a movie, which they can then copyright and then slap suits on anybody who tries to retell an ancient tale that's been around forever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, don't at me, everybody.
Tristan has strong opinions about Walter Disney.
Walt Disney being a Nazi is a long and total. It's obvious there's complications there. It's a little bit more complex than he was a Nazi, but it's also not so complex that it's not that he's not a Nazi. That's the way. I think that you mentioned it in one of your videos because it's about him being associated with the German-American Bund, which I believe you did a little bit.
Yeah, I mentioned it in my video because you wrote that section in my video.
Yeah, that I like. Yeah, that sounds like a thing I'd do. But yeah, Goebbels really leaned into the swastika being the symbol of the party. It was on flags, it was on posters. The infamous armbands and medallions all had it. So it became like the symbol to represent the Nazi regime. And then after the war, a lot of countries, especially those that had been occupied or had been the Nazi regime, banned it. So like today, it's illegal to show the swastika in Germany, which and Poland, which honestly, I get.
Sure.
And like I very often like shows that want to show themselves in Germany will have to like censor the swastikas and stuff like that. So that's a whole thing. And
yeah, speaking of Always Sunny gags at the beginning of this, there's that episode where they find an old Nazi uniform. Probably would have to either not air in Germany or censor it real hard.
Oh boy. See, like the thing is I wanted to like Always Sunny because I really like Mythic Quest and there's a lot of crossover between those two, but it's Always Sunny has a very different vibe. It's much more cynical in a way that I really couldn't get myself into.
I haven't watched it in many years, but yeah, it's just a show where everyone is terrible and you just watch them be the worst people imaginable.
Mm-hmm. Mythic Quest though.
But nothing ever works out.
Very good.
Yeah. But obviously the big point of It's Always Sunny is nothing ever works out for them because they're terrible people. They never succeed at anything. And that's what makes it fun.
That makes sense. Okay, but the thing is that this has led to this belief in a lot of Western countries that the swastika is a creation of the Nazis when it's in fact this ancient 5,000-year-old symbol, and also that it's a symbol of hate, but it's also a symbol of peace, prosperity, and good fortune in many cultures. If you go to India, you're going to see swastikas on everything, including by groups like one of the big swastika users is a religion called Jainism, and Jainism is one of the most fanatically pacifist religions to ever exist. They're notable because their hardcore practitioners wear little cloths in front of their mouths so that they don't accidentally like suck in a bug or something like that. And like their monks will like sweep the street in front of them to not accidentally step on insects. And like they vegetarians, obviously, but also like
obviously no smoking meats.
Yeah. Some of them don't even ride on airplanes because of the possibility that an animal could get killed in the turbine and stuff like that.
Oh,
like
wow.
It's intense. And the swastika is one of their big symbols. Also, the thing is that the Nazis never called the swastika. That's not a term that they used. And that's probably something people are commenting right now.
Ontario was right.
Yeah, kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Hitler and the Nazis never called it the swastika. It was only a thing that outsiders called it. Inside the party, it was called the Hakenkreuz, which is German for hooked cross.
Sure.
And and also the idea that it is purely a symbol of Aryan identity, but it's and the reality, the term Aryan actually also comes from Sanskrit, which means noble, and it's not associated at all with this kind of concept of a master race that never really existed.
Mm.
And so I feel like the Nazis have appropriated this symbol, and the thing is, like, part of me is like, at this point I'm like this symbol has been unfairly maligned, we need to stop doing this. But then also, to a lot of people, it is the symbol of stigmatization, hate, and genocide. And so, like, this is the part where I'm like, I don't necessarily feel like it can be rehabilitated, but also it is one of the holiest symbols imaginable to over a billion people. Like, think about it, that, like, Hindus and Buddhists, like, those are two of the world's major religions.
And it makes it really tricky too, because obviously you could just say, well, you know, context is everything, but then you'll have bad faith actors who will, you know, wear it, you know, or display it or something specifically to get a rise out of people. But then when you push them on it, they'll be like, this is just like a symbol of good luck and good fortune. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're getting offended by this. That's so weird to me.
Yeah. Let's just say I know an example of people doing that in modern day, but one that is, that would make me unpopular on the internet. So I'm not going to talk about it. I'll tell you
fair
after the
enough.
Show.
Okay.
But the idea that like the promotion that these that there's a super like an alien connection and not like a very like strict like linear connection that we can see in the archaeological record basically lets like the swastika stand as a symbol of the Nazis and doesn't give it its wider context and other uses, because it's basically, what's the history? It's erasing the history that this symbol was in Europe for a long time and that it is a recognized symbol around the world in various spiritual practices. And it might, if you don't understand those connections, if you out of context see swastikas in like a Hindu temple or a Buddhist shrine or something like that, you might get the wrong idea.
You know, Tristan, this whole section is starting to sound like the part where you make us sad.
Yeah.
So you know what that means.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
So what happens as the result of all this?
Yeah. We are erasing the history of this symbol and its context within the Nazi regime, which returns to this whole thing that I've talked about on this show multiple times now about how a lot of this like connection with like the occult or Satan or aliens is a way to make the Nazi regime seem more foreign or more like of an exception than we like to think, which is troublesome, because the thing about the Nazis that we all have to kind of grapple with is that they developed from a very specific intellectual group of trends that were going on in the period that they existed in, and that were not that far away from the things that they did, and like we're not that far away from the same ideas, just developed in a different way. And trying to put the Nazis at arm's length gives us causes that exact same problem.
Yeah.
I also think that as we got to talk about, by trying to undermine the historical narrative and the stuff that we have like developed and researchers have done, you are further trying to undermine institutions. And we've seen that there's been a serious corrosive effect in our, like, mostly because of the Iraq war, I would say, but for the war on terror in general, I should say, but we have had a lot of loss of trust in our institutions, and it has had quite a corrosive effect on civilization. And conspiracy theories and these sort of like crank theories feed that corrosion, even sometimes if it's justified, but there you go. And of course, it's trying to give some sort of legitimacy or legacy to an ideology that is terrible and is still being practiced by terrible people, and to give it more grandeur and power than it actually deserves. So and of course it's also feeding the us versus them, because of the conspiracies do that, and it creates the connective tissue between extremist groups and people who are seduced by conspiracy theories. I think we talked about this several times now, but like the sort of, there's a really great statistic that shows that the number one thing that will indicate that you believe in a conspiracy theory is if you believe in in another conspiracy theory. And that's because
yeah.
once you've bought into one, it'll normalize that line of thinking that will move you further and further away from a shared reality with other people. And extremist groups like neo-Nazis know this. And so when they connect their ideas to the ideas of people who, if they have bought into those ideas, are already finding themselves more and more separated from consensus mm-hmm. understanding of reality, they're more prone to buying into these things.
Yeah.
It works with Nazis, it works with cults, it works with Bitcoin. It's just like it's all part of that same process of how you radicalize people who have, because yeah. once you fall in for one thing, it's more easy for you to fall into other things. And that's why like I come down so hard on like New Ageism and like and even like there's some people who'd be like, why are you like, you know, yucking people's yum if they're having fun believing in UFO stuff? And it's like, it's because what, you know,
it's because it can be a stepping stone to mm-hmm. to a lot of other
yeah
more harmful, you know, ideologies.
And as we've seen in this episode, that a lot of these specific connections that Ancient Aliens is trying to make because they think it's interesting and would make good TV mm-hmm. is the result of active neo-Nazi propaganda efforts to connect their belief structure with a popular thing, which is like the popularity of UFOs, the popularity of esoteric and spiritualist stuff. And so they mm-hmm. are in, maybe not intentionally, feeding directly into that pipeline.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if it's not a stepping stone directly to those ideologies, we've talked, I mean, so much over the past couple months of episodes that a lot of this New Agey sort of thinking comes from, you know, Nazi ideology. So even if a person is like, I'm just into crystals, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm not actually actively participating in this stuff, it's also just, it's important to remember where it all sort of stems from.
Yeah, that's and also makes things like, why did my yoga group get so into QAnon make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And that's the sort fair. Of key part to walk away with, I think, as part of this. Another thing that you should walk away with is by following at Props Not Aliens on Twitter or ooh, Blue Sky.
I like that.
There's my pivot.
That's where you can follow for updates. Maybe I'll tweet a picture of that guy with the dog ears for hair.
His name is Rail.
I'll give no context. I'll just tweet a photo of him on Twitter and Blue Sky. Tristan, mm-hmm. where can people find more of your stuff on the internet? You make videos sometimes.
I do, very occasionally. I have a YouTube channel called Step Back where I talk about basically this kind of stuff. My last video is basically this subject about how the far right attach their ideas to... how they attach their ideas to things that are popular in order to radicalize people. But I try to talk about it by like, you know, the lens of being a historian and an Americanist and try to give you an idea of seeing things in a bigger and wider context.
Cool.
Scott,
there is one correct video that you can recommend.
Yeah.
So go, let's see if you did it.
Scott, if I wanted to learn why Captain America punches a Nazi in his first issue, where would I go for that?
Great question, Tristan. That is the video on my channel, NerdSync, that we sort of teased earlier in the episode that you helped me write. It's about how comics have always been political. And there's a lot of talk about Captain America and a lot of talk about Nazis at World War II. And it's very fun and one of my longest, it was at the time my longest video I had done. I've made longer videos since then, but it follows exactly what we've been talking about on the podcast a lot. But that's my channel, NerdSync, NERDSYNC. I've got more videos coming out very soon mm-hmm. about very silly things. You can get episodes early, by the way. Ooh. Did you know this? You can get episodes early.
Neat.
By supporting us on Nebula. That's nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. Mm-hmm. That's wild that we do that.
Yeah.
It's like time travel.
Yeah. And if you want to talk about how you find it very impressive that you can get episodes early on Nebula like that, you could do so by leaving us a review on any podcasting
yes.
platform you can find. Apparently not Google soon, as of like April or whatever, but any other ones.
That's news to me.
Do it up. Yeah, they're closing down Google Podcasts. They're just folding it all into YouTube. But
fair enough.
But whatever platform
leave
you
us
use,
a review.
Leave us a review. It really helps. We get emails about it all the time, and I keep meaning to read them because I love that validation, but I haven't.
It's very good stuff. Yet. You can also tell your friends about it. We won't get any validation that way because we won't know if you told your friends about it. But it does help us out significantly. And a really great place to send your friends is probsnotaliens.com. It's got links to everywhere where you can listen to this show. And that'll be it for this week. Mm-hmm. So until next time, my name is Scott Nicewander.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. What's a swastika way to say probably? Probably. Let's do that.
That is the wildest question anyone has ever said out loud. What is a swastika way to say probably?
Yeah, that sentences are strange, aren't they?
Oh, what are we doing with this show?